Montana Talks, where you get the mic. Call in now at 406-294-0970. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
Hey, we were here for President Trump's inauguration day, and now we are back really highlighting several of the successes of the Trump administration and the Republican-controlled Senate. What an honor now, broadcasting live from Washington, D.C., Capitol Hill, Montana's U.S. Senator Tim Sheehy. Senator Sheehy, great to see you as always, my friend. Yeah, it's crazy seeing you here in the Capitol because You seem too young to be here. You know, we saw you pop out of the luncheon with Vice President J.D. Vance yesterday. Just before VP Vance came out, we saw you, and it's like kind of a surreal moment to be like, wow, one of our fellow veterans is here in the United States Senate. It was a surreal moment, kind of.
Well, as I said in the campaign trail, and I meant it, it's time for a new generation of leaders. And it doesn't mean that many of our senior leaders need to go, but it does mean that especially our generation, the GWAT generation, that joined up and fought during our nation's longest war, who had to get jobs during the great financial crisis, have had to live and grow families through COVID. I mean, we had some pretty historic times in the last 25 years, and our generation has had to fight through those. And I think it's time for us to have a voice on Capitol Hill in the halls of power. And as the youngest Republican member of the Senate, it's an honor to be here and be a voice for a generation. Especially when we start talking about these really challenging issues like, foreign policy. What are we going to do with our military? How do we rebuild our military? How do we deploy our military? You know, as you and I were both part of our exploratory campaigns around the world post 9/11 and learned that the limits of military power are very real. There's things we can and should do with our military, and there's things we should not be doing with our military. So I think our voice is so important that it's heard at this point in time.
When you look at what Secretary Hegseth is doing, Secretary of War Hegseth, and what President Trump is doing on the foreign policy front, big picture, what do you see happening?
America first. America first does not mean America alone or America only, but it does mean America first. And when you really boil that down, it's just common sense. Just like a parent does what's best for their children, takes care of their children. A parent may love all children, care about all children in the world. But at the end of the day, we're worried about our kids first. We're worried about our households first. If you're CEO of a company, you're worried about your company first. So it's not unrealistic and unreasonable to expect that our elected leaders need to worry about what's best for America first. So what our foreign policies we're orienting around is we're still standing with our allies. We're still standing with Australia, with the AUKUS agreement was just reaffirmed. I was with the Prime Minister of Australia last week and the President, and we've reaffirmed our alliance with Australia and how important it is in INDOPACOM. The President's in, Asia as we speak, seeing our allies. So we're with our allies, but it also means that we are focused on what's best for our country.
About 30 seconds before the break, you just had Montana Coffee right in Senator Daines' office right next to the conference room we're broadcasting from right now. Who'd you see across Montana?
Well, we had some great 4-H kids in from Belgrade. It's wonderful to see them. They're here doing a bit of a government education this week. Some homeschool kids, which is a homeschool dad myself. I have my kids here during the shutdown because we're kind of stuck here. So I've got my kids in town, given some constitutional education. Of course, we had some folks here from our Montana churches as well. So it's always great to see Montanans in D.C. meeting the delegation.
Yeah, it's a great time, and it's great to see you here as well. Well, we're going to take a quick break here on Montana Talks. We'll keep the conversation going off air back here just to take advantage of every opportunity we get some insight of what's going on back here on Capitol Hill. So quick break here on Montana Talks, back with Senator Sheehy. We're going to talk about the Fix Our Forests Act and this big ag summit he hosted last week.
Look at your Montana weather for Billings and Bozeman. With sunny skies across the area today, highs are in the mid-50s in Bozeman, around 60 in the Billings area. For tonight, we can expect clear to partly cloudy skies, mid-20s in Bozeman to the low 30s in Billings. And then Thursday's outlook does call for partly to mostly sunny skies, high temperatures from 48 in Bozeman to the mid-50s in the Billings vicinity. That's a look at your Montana weather on Montana Talks. I'm meteorologist Paul Frombly.
This is Health Call for Health. It's almost time for those spooky and fun Halloween costumes, but there are safety tips for decorative lenses. First up, changing the look of your eyes with special contact lenses could damage your eyesight. The FDA says decorative contact lenses are not cosmetics or over-the-counter merchandise, and places that advertise them as cosmetics or sell them over-the-counter without a prescription are breaking the law. They're also not one-size-fits-all, and actual contact lenses need to be measured and fit properly by an eye doctor. A poor fit could cause scratches on the cornea, infections, pink eye, decreased vision, even blindness. The FDA also says there are many places that will sell these cheap for as little as $20, but that you should never buy contacts from street vendors, beauty supply stores, novelty, or Halloween stores. You can get more tips at FDA.gov, or for more health news, go to FoxNewsHealth.com. House Call for Health. I'm Lisa Brady, Fox News.
Hey, Clay, if there was a summer camp for critical thinking, we'd be the chief counselors. Those jellyheads in June would be intellectual warriors by August.
Be a lot of fun, too. Some Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure references thrown in.
This podcast, like a daily dose of that, minus the campfires, archery, and pranking the girls.
The bona fide boot camp for critical thinking. You can get in on it for free at the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search our names, Clay and Buck, listen and subscribe.
Tackling the issues that shape our state. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Beef markets. Let's start with the cattle industry and much more because, of course, Senator Tim Sheehy, not only a Navy SEAL veteran, but you've also got the Little Bell Cattle Company. In fact, I just saw somebody with a Little Bell Cattle Company ball cap on yesterday. And, of course, but you just had this big ag summit last week. I mean, this was a huge deal, the Common Ground Summit. But, you know, you've been focused on these types of issues long before you ever even thought about running for office. And so the big picture when we talk about beef is how do we rebuild the cattle herds in the United States of America? How do we also lower the price for the consumer without undermining the effort to rebuild the herds in America?
You're the nail on the head. And you know, ag is a complicated subject. You know, to the average American outside looking in, ag's simple, you know. What's ag to the average American? I'm going to go to the grocery store and I can grab anything I want off the shelf. Avocado, banana, flour, fresh beef, fresh whatever it is. It's all available at the fingertips. And for most Americans, you know, they just have this perception that, oh, these things just pop out of a warehouse somewhere, you know, and just arrive on my shelf and I can get any piece of produce I want year-round in all 50 states, which is a very rare. This is like the last 60 years we've had that luxury. It has not been that long that human beings get any food they want year-round wherever they want it. And America is pretty unique in that regard. But the bottom line is food security is national security. And one of our greatest, most quiet superpowers we've ever had as the most powerful nation in the history of mankind is our ability to feed ourselves. And not just feed ourselves, but also feed the rest of the world. And you look at every other empire in history that has met its end, they all met their end when they had to import food from other places. When Rome had to import food, when the British living on a tiny island had to import food, had to import resources. The Japanese, you know, which led obviously to World War II. Time and again, we've had empires who have not been able to feed themselves. And although America is not an empire, we are the most powerful nation in history. And our ability to feed ourselves has been a key underpinning structural component of that. We've been very short-sighted in allowing our food industry and agriculture to be offshored, as we have with manufacturing for the last 30 years. And the low beef prices that for 25, 30 years have harmed our ranchers, and the crop prices, which have also recently especially been nosediving, are harming our ag community in very negative ways. Now, lately, beef has rebounded, and that's very good for our ranchers. We want it to be that way. Now, there's concern on the consumer side. We want beef prices down. The truth is, beef prices have been too low for a long time. And they've been harming our ranchers. Now, the price at the store is not what ranchers are getting. When a cow-calf operator sells his cattle, on the hoof, puts them on the truck, and he gets a check for that, that's not equivalent to what, for example, just yesterday, cattle prices dropped 50 cents a head. I'm sorry, it says 50 cents a pound, yet box beef prices went up $3. So inverse correlation there. What does that mean? That means more margin for the packers. So we've had an over-consolidated meat pack industry. 83% of meats in the U.S. are packaged by four companies, three of which are foreign-owned. We've surrendered control of a lot of our meat supply in this nation to foreign countries and foreign-owned corporations. So we had a fantastic summit last week. Joe Goggins of Billings was kind of the chair of it, put together a great group. All 50 states were represented. And the purpose of the summit, we had Secretary Rawlins there for a couple of hours. We had six senators, handful of House members. And the point was, ranchers are an individualistic bunch. Typically, you can't get them in a room to agree on much, and they want to mind their own herd. They want to take care of themselves. They don't want the government to help. But it's important, I believe, at this inflection point for American agriculture, especially multi-generation agriculture, that their issues are heard in D.C. Every other industry is here every single day, all day, lobbying for what's good for their industry. The ranching industry has not been. So it was important to have them here and have their concerns heard about tax incentives for families to hold on to their ranching operations, not sell them. Tax incentives for how they can buy equipment and grow their operations. Regulatory policies like grazing rights that were severely infringed during the Biden administration to make sure that grazing rights are respected and expanded. And, of course, our foreign imports of foreign countries' beef, which is has always been a structural component of our market. But we have to balance that to make sure that as we rebuild the American herd, ranchers aren't going to reinvest in growing their herds if we don't incentivize them to. If they're more incentivized to sell their ranch land and cash out than they are to invest in their business, then we can't expect them to regrow their herds. So it was very important at this point, this turning point in American ag, that we had some of the biggest producers in America, not packers, but the cow-calf operators, the growers, the feeders in the room saying, I want to stay in the ag business. I want my kids to inherit the ag business. But we need to see these changes if we're going to do that.
Yeah, and how we get more meat processing done locally. Exactly. That's something you've been a big part of. Like I say, even long before you ever even thought of running for office. A couple of minutes to go here with U.S. Senator Tim Sheehy as we broadcast live from Capitol Hill. The Fix Our Forests Act. We're going to talk about that in a little more detail here with Chairman Westerman coming in from the House side here a little bit later this hour. But this is a topic you are leading on. You're also an aerial firefighter. You've been leading on as a freshman senator, actually getting legislation across the finish line.
I'm the first and only freshman to actually get a bill passed into law so far. And actually, we've had a couple passed now, and I'm so proud of that because in this one, FOFA, the Fix Our Forest Act, is really a landmark piece of legislation. This will go down in history like the Great American Outdoors Act did. This piece of legislation, bipartisan from the very beginning, Alex Padilla, myself, John Curtis, John Hickenlooper. Understanding that our forests and our public lands have been mismanaged for far too long. Our federal agencies have not been responsive to the will of the people. Most importantly, the will of local residents who live around these lands, the industries that are there, our logging industries, our grazers, realizing that, yes, public lands are for recreation, no question. Yes, they're for hunting and angling and hiking and backpacking and all that. They're also for production agriculture to feed our nation. They're also to get timber to build our homes. They're also to mine and get the critical rare earths that we're buying from China right now. So common sense management and, most importantly, wildfire fighting.
Hey, all right. Well, Senator Tim Sheehy, great to see you as always. We'll catch up later on down the road when we got more time, but it's so great to see all the Montanans here for Montana Coffee and catch up with our delegation. Great to see you as always, and look forward to catching up the next time. All right. Quick break here on Montana Talks. Big thanks to our friends at Americans for Prosperity Montana for making all of this happen, whether it's expanding educational opportunities, reducing government overreach, or fighting inflation. AFP standing up for hardworking Americans. Back with Montana Talks live from the Capitol after this.
Saving you money, I'm Hillary Barsky. The process of improving credit scores is different for everyone. To boost them, you can start by actually knowing what your current score is showing in your credit report. If it's not that great and you have a large amount of debt on one of your cards, tackle your debt as much as you can by paying off your credit card every month. But if that's not possible, try to make small payments, which can help you maintain or increase your credit score. And if you can, pay just a bit more over the minimum monthly payment. Well-known payment method is the debt snowball, where you pay down your debts from smallest to largest. And also try to use credit cards in moderation. Many people's first instinct is not to use any credit cards at all to avoid getting into debt, but that's not a good move. When using your credit card, make sure to pay it on time each month. After you have paid off your credit card, you might think it's best to close the account. However, this actually hurts your credit score. Saving you money, Hillary Barsky, Fox News.
You know, every now and then we'll get a chance to catch up with Montana's U.S. Senator Steve Daines. He'll call into the show from Capitol Hill, and then he heads right into Montana Coffee. So I've been saying, you know, one of these days we need to come do the radio show from Montana Coffee. Well, that's what we're doing with Wednesday's Montana Talks. Montana Talks live from Montana Coffee on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C. Catch our statewide program right here, 9 to 10 a.m. Sponsored by Americans for Prosperity. Montana.
Song again. Here's that song again.
For the 100th time today.
Here's that song again.
It's gonna be stuck in your head all day.
Yay! Here's that song again.
It will make you cray cray.
You love your kids enough to watch that TV show a bajillion times. Love them enough to make sure they're in the right car seat for their age and size. Show them you love them. Keep them safe. Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
This is where Montana Talks Ag.
with Lane Nordlund.
FFA members from across Montana and the nation are heading to Indianapolis, Indiana this week for the 98th National FFA Convention and Expo. Claire Mernon is president of the Montana FFA Association.
So there's supposed to be 70,000 members that are going to attend this year, and they have so many different opportunities, whether they're competing in CDs or LDEs, which are career development events and leadership development events, or they are just touring around Indianapolis and Indiana, or getting to be involved in our convention and expo. There's amazing general sessions, and there's a huge career exploration convention that allows them to really get to go see all sorts of different colleges and then also different career fields as well.
Mernon, a graduate of Shepherd High School, is attending her fifth National FFA Convention.
I think that my largest takeaway every single year from convention is really that agriculture is so broad across the United States, and getting to learn more about the different perspectives of the agriculture industry across the United States is amazing, and being able to engage with other FFA members, whether it's state officers or it's even other just members, it's so amazing to be able to engage and learn more about different types of agriculture and continue to grow my own leadership skills and learn more about how I will continue to be a leader in the agriculture industry.
That was Montana FFA President Claire Mernon, and I'm Lane Nordlund.
Talking about the issues that matter to Montana statewide. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Well, great now to catch up with Montana Congressman Ryan Zinke, of course, former Trump Interior Secretary, retired Navy Commander. We just talked with Navy SEAL Tim Sheehy, now Navy SEAL Commander Ryan Zinke. Commander, good to see you.
Good to be here. Well, it's really not good to be here in Washington, D.C., but I'm here. Where we still have work to be done for the constituents. But having said that, I got to tell you, from a Navy SEAL perspective, this is a really dumb idea to shut down the government, and it's executed poorly. So, yeah, what we have is on now 1 November.
This is the Schumer CONOP, the Schumer concept of operations.
Let's just call it for what it is. This is about protest. It's not about policy. If you want to talk about health care, then that's why we have committees. And everyone gets that, hey, there's this end on January 1st. The health care costs going to go up. Everyone's going to look at it. Yeah, it's an issue for both sides. But the shutdown itself is just about a protest. So, and the Senate has to decide when they come back. But here, you know, as a former secretary who went through the longest shutdown, is that this has consequences. Meaning that the troops, likely President Trump is going to try to pay them again. But you got a lot of people that are standing tall, their duty stations not getting paid. And from a former commander, there's a couple things you don't do. You don't mess with a sailor's pay. Because when you mess with a sailor's pay, you mess with a sailor's family's pay. And so you got interest rates now on a credit card are at 25%. So you don't pay, it means you're going to load the credit card up. So it's going to cost, you know, people that are just doing their duty. And then talk about WIC. You know, WIC is there for people that really need help, right? There's a lot of abuse.
Women, infants, and children.
Yeah, but it's there for people that need some help. And now you're going to withdraw that and hold it over politics. And then you talk about SNAP, the same thing, you know, a lot of families. So this has real consequences. And then just on the FAA. Right. Our air traffic controllers are a critical essential. You know, they're at their post. But I can tell you there's a lot of contracts that do maintenance on the screens, the systems, the lights at the airport. And a lot of those contracts over time will falter. So, you know, what the air will be safe, but it's going to cause less, you know, more disruption because you have less flights. And it's going to be more disruptions, which is going to hurt businesses. And so anyway, I'm hoping this nonsense comes to an end. But I'm obviously at my post.
Yeah. So the Senate's up and running, and you know, because they keep having votes, and the Democrats keep voting to shut down the government. Who knows? They may keep it going through the November 4th elections because they don't want to anger their far left base, because they want their far left base to come out for the Kami Mamdani and Spanberger and these other races. So they might continue this no matter how much it harms their own constituency, just to feed the radical left monster, essentially, that they've created.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. What's going on is that on the Senate side, you know, and look, I get what they're protesting against. They don't like President Trump. They find President Trump to be probably braggadocious. They don't like him. They've never liked him. But they're protesting against Donald J. Trump and his policies. All right, you're protesting against. But what are you protesting for? You know, that's a fair question, right? We fought, you know, for our country. You're a Montana National Guard hero. Look, we fought for our country. So what did you fight for? So are you really fighting for open borders? Are you fighting for health care for illegal aliens? Are you fighting for men playing women's sports? Are you fighting for transgender mutilation of children? I mean, what are you fighting for? And you saw that during these protests. You know, the signs were all over the map. You know, climate change to abortion rights to, you know, whatever, which is great. And I'm glad most of the protests that we had were largely peaceful. And you and I defended the rights of people to protest. So that was good. But when you look at the view of what they were protesting for, America's not there. And certainly Montana is far, far, far from there.
It was so great. Yesterday, Jesse Ramos and I, Jesse Ramos with AFP Montana and I, we were walking across the Capitol because we had just gotten to run into Vice President J.D. Vance, caught up with Senator Daines after their GOP lunch with the vice president. And then we ran into Chairman Jim Jordan, who was just in the Flathead with you last summer. We did a really cool rally at the ballpark there in Kalispell. But
I did it with Jim last night.
Did you? Oh, nice. Yeah, great, great. Yeah, we said hi to him.
Great member. And tell you, one thing I like about Jim is, you know, he's a wrestler of NCAA. I think he was maybe lost one in his career, but he just has that go get him, never quit, mentality. And he's driven. And he's also a good golfer, by the way. He golfed up in Whitefish.
Oh, nice, yeah. Nice. Well, it was so cool seeing him. And of course, he was hanging out with Francis in Big Fork, one of our great listeners as well. Yeah. But I say that to say that the Republican House has gotten a lot of work done. I don't know if they've, you know, on these appropriations bills. And, of course, Schumer's trying to bring that to a halt as well. But what all is being done right now so that when the government is back up and running, boom, we get right back into knocking these appropriations bills out one by one and then codifying a lot of the great work that the Trump administration is doing more on that front, too.
Yeah, and you look at the one beautiful bill, some of the significant wins on, you know, there's $50 billion worth of rural health care. And, you know, and that's distributed by the states to address, you know, needs that are not New York City or San Francisco-based health care. Rural health care in Montana has a lot of things that are a lot different. Right, and the flexibility to put resources in and shore up our rural hospitals is important. So there's $50 billion sitting there, but it goes to state. So, you know, they want to remove that. So part of the provision of this shutdown, they want to remove that provision, and we're not going to go there. Yeah, I'm an optimist about, you know, back to the shutdown. I'm an optimist. It's going to hurt, unfortunately, people that shouldn't get hurt. I think a shutdown is an indication that Congress is not doing their job. But in this case, the House did our job. And the Senate rules are 60 votes. So you have
just a tiny handful of Democrats are shut down, and all the public employee unions, which should have been the base of the Democrat Party, they're hammering their own Democrats right now.
They should have hammered because a shutdown doesn't solve anything. If you're gonna try to solve healthcare, remember Obamacare was supposed to do that, and then Obamacare was supposed to relieve the ranks on Medicaid. It didn't. So healthcare costs have gone up 40% or 60%. Medicaid roles are filled, and the actual service of getting healthcare, being accessible, affordable, reliable, has diminished. So what we're looking at is reduce the pharmaceutical costs. That will help. President's been on that and driving hard on that. But structurally, we got to look at where the costs are too, and the triad it was important is affordability, accessibility, and quality service. Right, that's the triad.
With Speaker Johnson, we were kind of talking about this yesterday with Speaker of the House Mike Johnson. What a good guy. What a nice guy. But it seems like because he's such a good guy, he's really helped keep the Republicans in the House together. And then, of course, having President Donald J. Trump keeping Republicans together as well. But do you think we're finally on the path now to going back to like the balanced budget of the Newt Gingrich 90s and then reining in more of this deficit spending and reining in this national debt?
Well, I think President Trump described Speaker Johnson probably the best of anyone. He said he was hardworking. And I can tell you absolutely 100% he is hardworking. He works as hard as Donald J. Trump, which I've never seen anyone work around the clock like he does.
That's saying something.
He said he's a good man. And Speaker Johnson is a good man. I think he's got a good background. He wants to do it for America. And he's a religious man, and I think that's pretty obvious to everyone where his guide and compass is. But he's been effective.
20 seconds to go before the break. What did you hear at Montana Coffee from the Montanans that were here?
This first time we've had Montana Coffee in Senator Dade's office. It was nice to hang out with the senator and Tim Sheehy, and it was nice. We do this every week, Wednesdays usually the Hart Building, but it's nice to just talk to Montanans, and see what's going on and what issues they have, and it's just nice to be among good folks.
All right. Well, Congressman Zinke, great to see you. Thanks for being with us.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right. Well, this is incredible. Hey, and in fact, big thanks to all of our friends here. In fact, Senator Steve Daines just came in and said hello here once again. But what a lineup we've got for you here. Already this morning, we've caught up with pretty much our entire congressional delegation. Congressman Troy Downing is going to join us next hour of this show. But then we're getting other friends that are coming in. Senator Steve Daines brought in Senator Kevin Cramer out of North Dakota. And now we've got the chairman of the House Natural Resources Committee, Chairman Bruce Westerman, a congressman out of Arkansas. Mr. Chairman, great to have you on Montana Talks. What an honor. I understand you're the only forester in the U.S. House of Representatives. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. It's been that way since I got there, Aaron, about 10 years ago. But I love Montana. I was just out there a couple of weeks ago, Governor Jim Forte at an energy conference. And great to be with you. Thanks for having me on.
In fact, we've got Jesse Ramos here with Americans for Prosperity Montana. Jesse, as I understand it, you were one of the keynote speakers at that energy conference along with Chairman Westerman. What stood out to you from Chairman Westerman's remarks, or what would be a question you'd want to start with here this morning?
Yeah, Chairman Westerman, good to see you again, or good to talk to you again. It was great seeing you out in Montana. And I have to be honest with you, I was shocked to learn that Arkansas was an even bigger timber state than Montana was.
Yeah, Arkansas has got a lot of timber and a lot of timber infrastructure and mills here, and we don't have near as much federal land as Montana does, so we're able to actually harvest our timber and process it. But ironically, I'm getting ready to go in to meet with a group here in my hometown of Hot Springs, Arkansas. It's the Federal Timber Purchasers Organization, and a lot of folks from Montana and the West that are here in my hometown today to talk about federal timber purchasing. And you know, even though we only, we have one of the smaller national forests, the Ouachita Forest, which is here around Hot Springs, is usually the most productive in cutting timber, which is a bit ironic, but I think it goes back to the fact that we've got the mill infrastructure here. Yep. And timber management is widely accepted, and we just don't get the protest and the holdups when the Forest Service in this area puts out a management plan or a timber sale, and people see the benefits of it. A lot of outdoorsmen here, like in Montana, people love to hunt, they love to fish, and they realize that when you do timber management, you get great wildlife habitat. Another interesting fact about Arkansas is the first European explorers that came through here said you could ride a horse at full gait through these forests. And the forests were also filled up with herds of buffalo and elk, which we don't have that. We've got elk coming back, not the eastern elk that were originally here. But this land here in the middle part of the country used to support a diverse range of wildlife. And if we would get back to managing the forest like it was back then, we would have even more wildlife again. Even though we've got a lot of wildlife, I don't want it to sound like we don't have plenty of deer and turkeys and other critters, but we've got opportunity to make even better improvements on it.
That's such a great point about the wildlife habitat. There's a film that's been traveling the state right now called The Real Yellowstone, and that's one of the points he's emphasizing there for sportsmen in particular is if we better manage our federal lands, if we better manage our so-called public lands, we'll have better wildlife habitat. That's why a lot of the wildlife ends up on private land is because they better manage private land, so they have better habitat. So if we better manage our federal lands, we can have better wildlife habitat. That's really a big part of, you know, earlier this hour, we caught up with Senator Tim Sheehy from Montana. And, you know, he's, as an aerial firefighter, is working on fixing our forests in the United States Senate. You're taking the lead in the United States House. In fact, I think it's your legislation, if I remember right, Chairman Bruce Westerman.
Yeah, we originated that bill in the House in the Natural Resources Committee, passed it last fall, and had a good bipartisan vote on it. And then, as you remember, early this year, the devastating fires out in Los Angeles, and we passed it with 64, I believe, Democrat votes. If everybody had been there voting, I think we would have had 70 Democrat votes on it. All Republicans voted for it. So it's a very bipartisan bill. And it's the accumulation of all the forest policy that I've worked on since I've been in Congress. So we've come a long ways from, you know, hard to even sometimes get a partisan vote on forest management to having a big bill that got bipartisan support out of the House. It was actually the first bill like that we passed out of the House this year early in January. And then over to the Senate, and a couple of weeks ago, or I guess last week, it passed out of the Senate Agriculture Committee, and Senator Sheehy and Senator Curtis from Utah were the Republican co-sponsors. Senator Hickenlooper was a Democrat co-sponsor, along with Senator Padilla out of California. So good bipartisan support, really sound policy that will allow folks to go in and manage in the federal forest and hopefully be able to remove some of this fuel load that's been spurring all the big fires out there. And at the same time, give some confidence so that investors will go back and rebuild mill infrastructure. You know, we're still importing 25% to 30% of the wood products that we use in this country. And that just drives me crazy when we've got all of this timber that needs to be harvested to make the forest healthier, to create better wildlife habitat, to make our watershed more sustainable, all the benefits of a healthy forest, and plus we can have economic benefits from it too. So very excited about Fix Our Forest. I've texted with Senator Thune, and I think he's, I know he's very supportive of the bill, and hopefully he'll get it on the floor of the Senate for a vote sooner than later.
Yeah, Jesse Ramos, what Chairman Westerman just said there about getting more investment into rebuilding mills, that was music to my ears because, you know, you and I were both also at the Western Congressional Caucus Summit earlier this year in Whitefish, and the chief of the Forest Service talked about that very issue. You know, if, you know, to get a mill back up and running in, say, St. Regis, Montana, $240 million to reopen a mill like that. So, I don't know if you had some thoughts on that point for a question or a follow-up there for the chairman as well, Jesse.
Yeah, absolutely, Chairman. And obviously, you're singing my song, too, on the timber side of things. And I think we at Americans for Prosperity, our number one priority is permitting reform. And also one of your bills, the SPEED Act, ties kind of right into logging, mining, energy projects. Can you talk a little bit about that in addition to the Fix Our Forests Act? What else is broken? Because it's not just the mills, it's not just logging in Montana. We've got mines with over 100 billion pounds of copper in them that's enough to rebuild our energy grid twice, and it's just sitting there. It's 40 years waiting on a permit.
Absolutely, Jesse. And the Fix Our Forest Act, really what it fixes is the NEPA policy that's been a roadblock to allowing forest management. So we've got great bipartisan support on correcting those NEPA issues as it relates to forestry and forest management, something that most people can agree that we need healthy forests. So that's very encouraging that we're able to do that in the Fix Our Forest Act. The SPEED Act applies those NEPA changes across everything. And when I say everything, that is a lot of stuff, because NEPA is weaponized to stop mining projects, to stop energy projects, to stop pipelines, to stop transmission lines. People are using it to stop wind and solar. They're using it to stop renewable energy development. It affects everything. So we've got some bipartisan support to fix NEPA so that we can build again here in our country. And that's what the SPEED Act does. It's short, or it's an acronym for Standardizing Permitting and Enhancing Economic Development. And again, we've got bipartisan support in the House. Our goal is to put together as strong a bill as we can out of the House and get the Senate to come on board with it. But there's a lot of work happening in the Senate on permitting reform, too. I see this as the biggest issue we've got going into the end of this year. It's very important that we get these changes put into law so that the next administration can't come in and change the rules again. This is detrimental to investment. You know, these projects take a long time to build, and they have a long economic window on them. And if you start with one set of rules and the rules change in the middle of the game, it can devastate your economics, which in turn devastates people's desire to invest. It just throws a wet blanket on everything. So, and I didn't even talk about public infrastructure. You talk about roads and bridges and navigable waterways and ports and airports and railroads.
So much in America to be rebuilt. So much to make America great again, the work that's got to be done. And, of course, you're taking the lead on that in the House as the chairman of the House Natural Resources Committee. Congressman Bruce Westerman, the chairman, an honor to have you on the show. Say hi to our Montana friends when you run into them here in just a few minutes down there in Hot Springs, Arkansas.
I'll do that. And good to be with you, Aaron. And you know, Jesse, he knocked it out of the park. He's got a gift of speaking. I was very impressed with
his
remarks
leader
there. Yeah. So
Fox Sports Update.
I get that it's easy to write Ohtani versus Guerrero. To us, it's Toronto versus Los Angeles. But that swing was huge.
There's a fly ball to deep left center field. Headed back there. It is gone. Vlad Jr. gives the Jays the lead. The franchise face putting the team on his back.
You know what I mean? That a sweeper is a pitch designed to generate pop-ups, in my opinion. And the swing that Vlad put on it was elite. And after last night and kind of all the recognition that went into Shohei individually, and he's on the mound today, it's a huge swing from Vlad. It's a huge swing to get us going.
I tell you, this guy's amazing, and he's ready for everything. I mean, this is the first mistake that Ohtani has made.
And I think that gives you some momentum and Shohei settled in, struck out quite a few. The swing from Vlad was game-changer.
And the Blue Jays have tied this series up after the gut-wrenching loss last night that might have just wiped a lesser team off. The Blue Jays bounce back and win it 6-2.
Very impressive.
World Series Game 4 on Fox TV started last night, and it ended last night. No extra innings, unlike the evening before when the Dodgers beat the Blue Jays in 18 innings. In half as many frames, Toronto took Game 4 by a 6-2 count. Shohei Ohtani charged with 4 earned runs in 6-plus innings. Now the first team to win 2 more games will be World Series champs. Game 5 is tonight at Dodger Stadium. Last home game for the Dodgers this year. The series goes to Toronto for Game 6 Friday. Starting pitchers tonight, Blake Snell for Los Angeles and Trey Savage for Toronto. NBA reigning champion Oklahoma City Thunder improved to 5-0. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander scored 31 points in OKC's 107-101 win over Sacramento. I'm Jared Max.
Get more on the Fox Sports app and foxsports.com.
Here's a look at your Montana weather for Billings and Bozeman. With sunny skies across the area today, highs from the mid-50s in Bozeman to around 60 in the Billings area. For tonight, we can expect clear to partly cloudy skies, mid-20s in Bozeman to the low 30s in Billings. And then Thursday's outlook does call for partly to mostly sunny skies, high temperatures from 48 in Bozeman to the mid-50s in the Billings vicinity. That's a look at your Montana weather on Montana Talks. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley.
The Sac State president was talking trash about the Montana Grizzlies and all of FCS football. Yeah, same guy who apparently talked about ending whiteness. He got sacked by the Montana Pandas on Friday night. Yeah, if you haven't heard the woke backstory on this Sac State president, no joke. He was on some podcast talking about ending whiteness. Then he was mocking the Grizzlies. And then he got sacked. MontanaTalks.com.
Montana Talks, uniting the Treasure State, one conversation at a time. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
All right. Well, I finally got to play this audio. I need to share this with you because I was actually amazed that it picked up the remarks of Vice President J.D. Vance so well. So if you were listening to the 6 o'clock hour of the show, we were talking with Senator Steve Daines, and timing just worked out great. So yesterday, Jesse Ramos and I, Jesse with AFP Montana, we were, you know, walking across Capitol Hill, and we thought, hey, let's pop into Senator Daines' office. You know, that's where we're going to be broadcasting from here this morning. So let's top in, say hi. Well, as it turns out, a couple of the staffers were about to go link up with Senator Steve Daines right after he was wrapping up the luncheon with Vice President J.D. Vance. So they're like, hey, you guys want to tag along? So we're like, heck yeah. All right. So left our backpacks here. We went over to the Capitol and stood outside the Mansfield room. The room in honor of former Montana Senator Mike Mansfield, of course, and out walks J.D. Vance. And then all of a sudden, of course, everybody's asking him about the meeting, about the shutdown and more. Some of the audio might be a little bit rough, but I think you can actually pick up a lot of his remarks as I was standing about, 10 feet or so from him. Let's see if you can hear it pretty well here. Okay, let me see here. I might have to plug it in. Oh, there we go. I'll plug it into another system. Hold on one second here. All right.
Benefits. Why not, by the way?
Well, you're asking the question, Mike.
look, we're trying to keep as much open as possible, and we're exploring all options. There are limitations on all these funds. There are limitations on how you can use them. Obviously, it's a limited pot of money, so even if you use them for one thing, that means you can't use them for another. We are trying as much as possible to ensure the critical food benefits get paid, and our military gets paid. But you know what makes this really easy? If the Democrats just opened up the government, then we wouldn't have to play this game where we're trying to find, you know, we're trying to fit a square peg into a round hole with the budget because we have such limited numbers to spread around very widely. The Democrats can just open up the government. We need five reasonable Democrats to do exactly that. We hope that they will. Well, first of all, look, we are focused on the American people right now and reopening the American people's government. As much as we obviously care on the historic peace agreement that the president struck, we have got to open the government. It's really important for the American people, and we need five Democrats to just do it, to just stop arguing about whether to reopen the government or not and just do it. We got 52 Republicans, 3 Democrats. We need 5 Democrats to help us out and reopen the government. My brief comment to that is, as I said in Israel, the president achieved a historic peace in the Middle East. The ceasefire is holding. That doesn't mean that there aren't going to be little skirmishes here and there. We know that Hamas or somebody else within Gaza attacked an IDF soldier. We expect the Israelis here to respond. But I think the president's peace is going to hold despite it.
All right, there you go. That was Vice President J.D. Vance when Jesse Ramos and I ran into him at the U.S. Senate right outside the Mansfield room yesterday. And then we caught up with Senator Steve Daines right after that as well. There's another minute or two of Vice President J.D. Vance's remarks. Maybe I'll start the 8 o'clock hour with that. I'll try to do that. But yeah, we got a big lineup still yet to come for you live from Capitol Hill.
My Alzheimer's diagnosis was hard to take. But early detection allowed us to take control of the situation together.
Talk to your family about seeing a doctor. Go to alz.org/time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Watch out!
You got me!
The galaxy is safe once again.
In the pretend universe, kids play with pretend guns. In the real world, it's up to us to make sure they don't get their hands on a real gun. If you have a gun in the house, keep it locked, unloaded, and stored separately from ammunition. Safe gun storage saves lives. Learn how to make your home safer at nfamilyfire.org. That's nfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by N Family Fire, Brady, and the Ad Council.